You're watching Meet the Movie Press, and today we're going to be talking about the male gaze lurking throughout the movie press, Gay Sulu, and new releases like Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates and The Secret Life of Pets.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Meet the Movie Press.
Good morning, Simon.
Good morning.
How are you, sir?
I'm good. Very busy, but very good.
Wonderful.
Yeah. How are you?
Terrific.
Awesome.
Just terrific.
You've been busy this week.
Yeah, that's right.
Busy?
Not really, though. I am Jeff Snyder, host of Meet the Movie Press. Follow me on Twitter at TheInSnyder.
I'm Simon Thompson. I co-host Meet the Movie Press, and you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ShowbizSimon, or on Facebook, This is Simon Thompson.
So what did you mean by I've been busy? I literally have not done anything all week.
We were just talking about, you were like, have you seen this? And I'm like, done, nailed it.
That's all I have time for, is to watch movies.
That's okay, though. That's cool. That's what we do.
All right, well, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on this week.
Some interesting stuff, actually.
It was a slow news week, but there was plenty to talk about.
Chit-chat.
Thanks to a trio of pieces, which I think is, you know, we have to start the show with really what everybody's talking about.
Okay.
Within film Twitter.
Is it the release of Mike and Dave?
Yeah, that's exactly cool.
Yeah, no, okay, the other thing.
There were three articles written relatively recently by three male writers. Mm-hmm. I don't know... Rich Cohen's orientation. Not that orientation really matters to this, but like Owen Gleiberman's straight, Wesley Morris is gay. I don't know what Rich Cohen is. So Variety's Owen Gleiberman wrote a story about Renee Zellweger and how she looks different to him in the Bridget Jones trailer, and how it's okay for Renee Zellweger to look different, but now Bridget Jones looks different, and that's too much for Owen's brain to handle.
Yeah,
that she looks.
I saw that.
Yeah. That she looks older after aging 10 years or whatever.
Yeah.
Vanity Fair's Rich Cohen wrote a profile about Margot Robbie tied to the release of Tarzan and Suicide Squad this
summer. She's doing a lot right now, so yeah.
And it was very just like fawning all about her looks. And then Wesley Morris. I don't really, honestly, this was the one I didn't get because I love Wesley and have been a Wesley Morris and been, you know, big fan of his. He won the Pulitzer. He's, you know, started writing for Boston papers and then he, you know, moved to Grantland, got this great job at the New York Times. And it was like I don't think it was like the paper's official review of The Shallows, but it was like his critic at large sort of position, a look at The Shallows, and he was surprised that it was Blake Lively and not Kate Hudson, and it was this weird thing about confusing the two of them, or basically why he wanted Kate Hudson in that movie.
I mean,
you didn't read that one, though.
No. But I mean, from the summary that you said, we can all recast movies with who we would rather have seen in roles. That's great. It just didn't happen. I get the fact that blonde woman, you know, if you're looking for a blonde woman in a bikini, that is totally interchangeable. I love The Shallows. I think it did okay. I think it should have done better because it's a really great movie. I think it's overshadowed this summer. But Blake Lively is someone I've really personally not given, you know, a lot of kudos to, a lot of credit to in the past. I find her stuff is good, generally. Sometimes very good, but often... Okay.
I think she's been waiting for a movie like this to put her front and center.
She
I think
hasn't
we all
had
got
the chops, sure.
We all got a taste of what she can do in The Town. Yeah. And then there, you know, I didn't see Adeline. I think my mom really enjoyed it, though. And obviously, I haven't seen the Sisterhood or the Traveling Pants movies.
You haven't?
I haven't, as a matter of fact.
They're actually not bad.
Okay.
Coming from a grown man and not a teenage girl.
Either way, it was just like, I didn't get the piece. I didn't get sort of what it was going for. He took a lot of flack for it. And just the New York Times in general is sort of, I don't know. I don't know if there's a dumbing down going on.
I would probably get it more from if it was a case of her doing a bad job in the movie. And she did not do a bad job in the movie.
She's good
in the movie. So I don't see the point. It's just a recasting piece. It's making a story out of something that's not a story, if you know what I mean.
It's just kind of like, I don't know, it was mean-spirited and atypical, you know, from Wesley. The other two pieces, I think, were a little bit more problematic than that one. the Rich Cohen Margot Robbie profile obviously took a lot of heat. Jen Yamato at the Daily Beast did a great job, sort of talking about a few, you know, these
She's
three pieces,
journalist.
As well as LA Weekly's piece on Sky Ferreira. It was just, we know Margot Robbie's beautiful. We, you know, we see her on the cover of the magazine. It just was a lot of words. And then, people, you know, I think Lindsay Barr went through Rich Cohen's history and sort of saw this style of writing in a lot of his profiles, including one in about Alicia Silverstone.
Yeah.
When she was only 18 years old. And I mean, I don't want to say that women don't write similar profiles about men, because I think that they do.
Yeah.
And, you know, movie stars, they are trading on their looks. So I think that it's fair game for them to be discussed, but there's certainly a line to it, sort of a tricky balance that you have to strike.
Yeah,
I think Rich Cohen blew kind of right past it.
Yeah, I think you're right, but I think I know you're right, and I totally agree with your point. But I think also Margot Robbie is in a position where we remember with The Big Short, you know, the cutaway where it's like, here's Margot Robbie in a bath, and it, you know, she, if you are going to, I'd say,
trading on that sexuality.
Yeah, if you're going to trade on your sexuality and objectify, the fact that she has a sense of humor about it herself makes it a bit easier for me to swallow. But the fact she'll go, okay, fine, I'm sexy, I'm hot, I'm actually going to play on this, is great. If it was purely objectification, and she didn't sort of embrace that side of it, it would make me more awkward than this does. I don't think it's right. I agree with you. I don't think it's the right thing to do. I don't think it's, you know, the right kind of piece to write. But
do you think that, I mean, you know, these three outlets, Variety, Vanity Fair, New York Times, it's not like there's going to be any real consequences from the publicist. And that's another thing. Everyone sort of gets up in arms on behalf of Margot Robbie. Has she come out and said anything that she didn't like the piece? What if she liked it?
Well, not as far as I'm aware, certainly. But I'm just kind of surprised to see that. The thing that surprised me most of all was the fact that this was a Vanity Fair piece, because their editorial tends to be more cerebral and very interesting and very considered. I'm not saying this was a frivolous piece by any stretch of the imagination. Obviously, thought was put into it. But their editorial tends to be of a higher level rather than a purely physical.
Let's take six letters out of that word, though. Editorial, editor. Well, you know, where are the editors in some of these positions, and how come they're not really getting any flack? You didn't see anybody talking about Graydon Carter as the editor of Vanity Fair, right?
I'll tell you. Here's my take on it.
Yeah.
It's because, if it wasn't the piece that it was, would we be talking about it? No. This has got
more what they want?
Talk about it. Yeah, I think everybody wants this. You want a story that's going to get people talking.
And even if it's in a negative way. Like, I was curious about this with regards to Owen's piece. A few weeks ago, I read Owen's book, Movie Freak. I loved it. I think that we actually have a lot in common. And Owen was sort of very frank about his sexual issues in the book.
Okay.
And just his way of sort of looking at the world and his interactions with, members of the opposite sex. And so the piece that he wrote didn't necessarily surprise me. I've been guilty of this, too. So I was at, I think it was a Variety intern and still writing for Ain't It Cool News, when The Grudge 2 came out, Simon, and I wrote a piece, about a review of the movie, and it said something mean about Amber Tamblyn's teeth. And it was like a total, like, low blow, unnecessary pot shot. And I felt bad about that for the last 10 years. It's haunted me. There's a certain way to talk about actors and actresses as they look, but this was such like an attack on Renee Zellweger, and obviously she does look different.
Yeah, she does.
But,
well, that was pointed out about 2 years ago when she attended an event. Because I remember personally, I'm guilty of commenting on it on Twitter by the fact that Renee Zellweger no longer looked like Renee. I think my exact comment was the fact that in a Renee Zellweger lookalike contest, Renee Zellweger would currently come last because she physically looked so different. But I think we're just not as forgiving of women when they age, or if it's the case for some women they have work done, we're much less forgiving about it for women than we are for men.
Right.
And I would like to see that change. I don't know if that will change.
I mean, there's always whispers about everybody. But yeah, women obviously seem to take the brunt of it. And I don't know if it's because, as sort of Jen suggested, the people writing all most of the pieces online or for magazines, newspapers, are men. She says the problem is that outlets need to hire more women.
Well, we've said that before. You know, I think that's the case. But I also see a lot of, you know, a lot of comments about, say, Leonardo DiCaprio. Well, Leonardo DiCaprio is going, you know, he's between roles and he's going on holiday and he's got a bit of a beer belly mm-hmm. going on. We all have that. You know, people are willing to look at that and comment on his physicality and go, oh, he's let himself go, or Jack Black, or, you know, that kind of thing. So it does work both ways. I think it just tends to hit harder when it is a woman. And I think having more female journalists will adjust that. But I know a lot of female journalists who work for magazines and newspapers who were quite happily write pieces about women who go out looking less than perfect when they go to the shop. You know, if you mm-hmm. work for the Daily Mail, if you work for, you know, some of the celebrity magazines and papers like that, you know, they are more than happy. Female journalists are as guilty as writing these negative pieces about women as many of the men journalists are. But it's just in a different way and not in a profile piece.
Yeah, that's fair. Anyways, these are all sort of interesting questions, but I think, you know, I just didn't hear enough this week about sort of editors. Mm. I mean, a lot of Variety's top editors are female. Like, how does it... And when a piece like this hits and there's so much negative reaction, is it considered a good thing because it's gotten people talking and it's driving people to the article, or is it a bad thing? Is there a little shame involved? Like, you know, THR came out and ran a story from Rose McGowan, ran like, you know, she's like taking up the cause and she's a social justice warrior now, if you will, to use the SJW terminology. No, but no. I mean, did you read that?
Yeah, I did. And I think all her points in that, and this is not the first time she's done it. I think she talks a lot of sense. What she says, whether you agree with it or not, it does make perfect sense. And her argument is a strong one. I mean, I don't know if this is ever going to change. But like you say, you know, is it a good thing or a bad thing? I think it's both. I think someone probably somewhere along the line weighed it up and went, we're going to get some shit for this. However, everybody's going to talk about it. And they are. Mm-hmm. And people will buy the issue, or they'll read it, or they'll, you know, perhaps people who wouldn't have bought Vanity Fair. You know, the ones that only come along, like people like you and I who buy it when there's a Star Wars cover or something like that. You know, we will then
buy. Yeah, that's when I buy Vanity Fair.
But yeah, you know, I think it's weighing up the pros and cons, and I think they've obviously gone, this is going to get people talking.
And it's funny that THR offered her that space too, though. Yeah. Like, you know, they would love to take a shot at their rival. It's that kind of subtle stuff. Pay attention to it, gang, because it all matters. And obviously on the show, you know, we discuss the movie press. It's not all about scoops.
Nope.
There are the people like Owen who are critics and write sort of, you know, their critical thoughts on things. Vanity Fair's Rich Cohen does profiles and interviews. Wesley Moore, you know, there's a lot of different roles now within entertainment journalism.
Well, Gregory in the chat says, negativity is driving our culture. People love to be upset and it gives things more traction. I think that's absolutely right.
I mean, it's true. It's unfortunate.
Hitting the nail on the head, yeah.
Anyways, we can move on. Speaking of things that people were...
Just finishing on that.
Sure.
To give you another example, to go back to Blake Lively, I wrote a review for The Shallows for IGN a couple of weeks ago, and some of the feedback...
You put a link in the chat.
I did. And some of that, I wrote a piece saying that basically in that film, there were moments in the film where she was running slow motion in a bikini. And clearly I was like, I know what those have been put in. They've been put in there to sexualize. So I said, some people are going to use that as a, you know, for their alone time, you know. And someone was like, this is outrageous that you suggest that we might go and watch this film and then save that memory and then masturbate. And then someone else was like, I'm totally going to watch that movie, save that memory and masturbate. So
I'll tell you, it was really, you know, funny.
The audience is as guilty as the writers, I think.
I saw Ghostbusters last night, and you know, I can't talk much about it, but the way that the women treat Chris Hemsworth in the film, like if the male Ghostbusters treated Janine like that,
I saw Bad Moms last night.
There would be so many fucking articles about it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I like that the movie sort of plays with gender like that, but at the same time, you just know if things are different.
Like I say, the same with Bad Moms. I mean, there's objectification of men in there. Mm-hmm. You know, it does work both ways. It is not right, but it happens on both sides, more so towards women, though.
Is it pandering? Is Hollywood pandering to the PC armies?
No, I don't think so. If they were, we'd see less films and we'd see less of it in things like Ghostbusters and Bad Moms.
And on that note, so apparently a movie you're seeing in a couple of weeks, neither of us have seen it yet, John Cho said that Sulu is gay in Star Trek Beyond. Mm-hmm. And I guess Justin Lin, or I don't know who, but maybe others, Simon Pegg, the writer.
Simon Pegg was a co-writer,
Simon Pegg did it as a tribute to George Takei.
Indeed.
And
who Sulu in the original show was not gay, but obviously he was in real life.
He was, you know, and is, closeted obviously. And dealing with all kinds of stuff while he was filming Star Trek. And so George came out and said, it's really unfortunate that they had to do that.
I can get
like the character wasn't written that way.
Mm.
And now they're sort of appropriating his sexuality to appease the PC crowd, so to speak.
Yeah. I get that. I don't think at the end of the I totally get what George is saying, and I'm a big fan of him, a big fan of his work.
I get it too. To me it feels like an empty gesture.
It is kind of an empty gesture, but I don't think it's going to affect anything. It's just backstory.
No, it's not like a character detail.
It's not like Star Trek is suddenly going to come Brokeback Mountain. You know, it's not going to go that way. It's just the fact that we've got a bit of backstory now. I don't think it's going to be something that takes center stage.
Exactly. It's meaningless, which is, so it's like, now they get to say, oh, you know, well, we were very inclusive, our Star Trek, and we had a gay Sulu, but it really doesn't mean anything, right?
But I think it's a you can't win situation, because we are getting a lot of people,
right. That's
and a lot
true.
Of audiences saying we're not getting representation of LGBTQ community. And then when you do, you get people saying it's empty gesture, or, you know, it doesn't really matter, or it's unfortunate. So I think you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
I would just like to see, you know, if you want to have a gay character in there, write a gay character. Don't just take someone whose sexuality sort of isn't being used, really, like Sulu, and say, because we're not making him super straight in these movies, we'll just make him gay. And then it's a win. Like, I kind of agree with George on this. It feels... I don't know.
But I think, is it an empty gesture, or is it just the fact that people are like, okay, it's starting to not matter?
It feels like trying to hit a quota or something, and it's just, I don't know, it's lazy to me. I haven't seen the movie, so I don't know how his sexuality plays into Star Trek Beyond. I'm assuming it won't.
Apparently, I'm seeing it on Tuesday or Wednesday next week.
He has a male partner, and they have a baby.
They have a child together.
Photo tacked up on the spaceship or something. I don't know.
So I don't think it's going to be in the middle of a battle and go, oh, yeah, I was saying to my husband the other day.
Right.
I don't think it's going to be shoehorned in there and in your face. And I don't think it's going to change the character of Sulu at all.
No, nor should it.
It just gives him back. It's like in Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy a couple of years ago, Gary Oldman and Benedict Cumberbatch.
Mm-hmm.
In the middle of that film, it was like, blah, blah, blah. Something happened, and then it was like, oh, okay, so Benedict Cumberbatch is secretly gay. And it was like, well, that seemed to me completely irrelevant, because that had nothing... That and his character had zero to do with his sexuality. It wasn't mentioned, it wasn't relevant in any shape or form. And I'm like, okay, to shove that in, that just seems like... That seemed strange at the time. I was like, okay, I don't have a problem with that at all. But that kind of came out of nowhere and is completely irrelevant. Was never touched on again. So to me, that was more of a deliberate gesture than just going, okay, so one of the Starfleet is gay.
I see. Again, all good discussion here. We're generating conversation.
I'm just happy to see more representation.
Good.
You know, and the fact that it's not a big deal. You don't get someone who comes on and they're Harvey Fierstein going, hey, everybody, I'm the gay guy. You know, it's not like that anymore.
That was just scarily good.
I know, right? So if you're looking for Harvey Fierstein for voice work and you can't actually afford him, I am available. But, you know, it's getting less like that. And it is just like, okay, so you're a gay spaceman.
But there's more diversity in the works.
Yeah.
We're getting a new Iron Man, and it's a black girl, a young black girl, right?
Mm. Yeah, 15-year-old black girl.
Pretty cool. I mean, obviously, this is sort of following the new Marvel way, following there's a female Thor.
Yeah.
Right? And then the new Spider-Man is Latino. It's Miles Morales, right?
Correct, yeah.
Interesting.
Which I think is, again, I think we're starting to see, and, you know, we're touching again on Star Trek, but we're starting to see that it's actually the comic book era and just group of fans that are actually leading the way.
Mm-hmm. That is interesting.
And again, looking at them and going, okay, fine, so she's black, but it's not all about her being black. Black Panther more so, perhaps, because there's more African heritage there. But, you know, you've got gay characters, you've got, you know, same-sex relationships. It's just... That's an area that it just seems to be just folded in really nicely.
It's so interesting that you said that the comic book community is really leading the charge.
Mm. Always has done, though, because, I mean, I mean this in the nicest possible way, and I consider myself part of this community. The comic book community, and I think the generally the film, and I think certainly sort of sci-fi community as well, trends to be more accepting of people with what would be considered as a very broad alternative lifestyle, and that covers everything. okay? It always has been and always will be. Kind of like, and I mean this in an affectionate way, the island of misfit toys. The ones that don't fit into what is the traditional straight, white, male or female Hollywood cookie cutter style of what is normal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's starting to move through from where it's been in comic books and TV shows and stuff, and it's starting to move through to Hollywood. And I think this is a great thing. And Robert Downey Jr. said, great. Awesome.
All right, I think so it just shows how time if they made an Iron Man movie with a 15-year-old black girl, who would you have playing her? Sorry to put you on the spot.
It's kind of difficult because there aren't a lot of young black actresses out there right now.
There's Q.
Yeah. Well, who was the girl that was in, she was not, it wasn't the right role for her, but she was in the Annie remake with Jamie Foxx, but was in...
Q!
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Cool.
I just call her Q.
Okay. But anyways. Yeah, I mean, which just goes to shows that we could do with more young black actors
that
as
little
well.
Girl from the Fitz is supposed to be really good. Royalty Hightower. It's a fucking hell of a name.
Yeah, awesome, right?
All right. Let's talk about some new releases before we take some calls.
Okay.
I saw Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates. You saw The Secret Life of Pets. Let's start with the animated movie.
Okay. Secret Life of Pets, obviously it's from the same sort of studio as Minions, Despicable Me, etc, etc. And the Minions' hands are all over this. They keep popping up as characters in the backgrounds, and there's a short before the movie. It was a mixed media screening, so there were lots of families there. There were some people who had tickets from outside. And I genuinely really enjoyed it. Animated movies can sometimes be, yes, that was a good animated movie. You know, wasn't so much story, but there are a lot of characters in here. It is brilliantly written. I mean, some of the visual and sort of written comedic beats are exemplary.
Does it live up to the Minions Despicable Me brands?
I think it's
better.
Does it live up to? Yes, it does. I think it surpasses that because I think it has an intelligence where the other ones have a simplicity, where Minions is really about slapstick. And, you know, that kind of thing. But this is really about, it's considered comedy. It's about community. There's perhaps a couple too many characters in this, but I think that's...
A lot of pets?
Yeah, there's a lot of pets.
How's the plot? Because it's like, I have not really been able to ascertain what the plot is.
No, it's really not clear from the trailers. That is a criticism. The plot is basically, obviously, we find out what dogs get up to and cats and birds and, you know, gerbils and whatever else during the day. Two dogs basically get separated from their group and they get... taken away by dog nappers, and their friends go and find them.
Okay.
Yeah. That's basically it.
Did you have a favorite voice actor? Did you like Louis C.K., Kevin Hart, Stone Street?
I didn't know it was Louis C.K., actually. I knew that Eric Stone Street was there. I knew some of the other cast as well. Kevin Hart's great. Kevin Hart is... He gives it full Kevin Hart, but doesn't sound like Kevin Hart. Which I really quite enjoyed.
Is Snowball going to get a spin-off?
Yeah, I think so. I think we're going to see some Snowball shorts, definitely.
Okay.
I mean, there's not a character in there that I didn't like, and the moments of tension and extreme peril were actually really convincing, and I genuinely found it quite exciting at times. It's very funny. There's some really nice, slightly more skewed adult comedy in there as well, which I think is great. So even if you're not going to go with kids, there's a lot in there to keep you entertained. And the visual style is absolutely stunning. The way the start is, it's like being on Soarin at Disney. You know, it's amazing. So I do recommend seeing it on a huge screen in 3D and sitting quite close because it really is quite, it's hugely immersive, which is really odd. And the design is beautiful. It's a very sharp script. Probably about 10 or 15 minutes, just a little bit too flabby.
Yep.
But I loved it. It's done really well opening night, 5.3 million on Thursday.
Ooh, which is strong. Box office bombs up in here.
And we're looking at $80 million. So I think this is going to be a new franchise for Universal and the animation studio. And the voice cast, they nail it. And it's nice. It's a strong cast, but it's not all going for like A-listers and stuff like that. There's a couple of surprises in there, and the characterization I thought was great. It was clever. It was sharp. Dare I say it's my favorite animated movie this year.
Better than Zootopia and Finding Dory.
It's better than Finding Dory. It's up there with Zootopia for me. It's got a lot in there. And I think a sequel is pretty much a given, and I would welcome that.
Well, Mike and Dave need wedding dates.
Okay, I've heard mixed things.
Yeah, I liked it. I mean,
cool.
Is it on the level of like 40-Year-Old Virgin or Knocked Up or one of those great, you know, laugh-a-minute Apatow comedies? Mm. Not quite. But I enjoyed it. I mean, Adam Devine is just bonkers in this movie.
I love him.
He's a wild man.
Great.
I had a blast with him, and Aubrey Plaza also really gets to let loose.
Cool.
Yeah, I thought it had a fair amount of laughs. It had, you know, a bit of sweetness in it. I was actually surprised about Efron, who's really just playing the straight man. I mean, he doesn't have much to do, and it seems like he's actually not in it nearly as much as Adam Devine. But yeah, I really like the supporting cast. It's a fun hour and a half at the movies.
Okay. Is it pay to go and see it in the theater, or is it watch it on a plane? Is it just the audience laugh along with you?
I think it's above a plane movie. I mean, I think it's a movie that you want to see in the summer when you just have a couple hours to kill and you want to laugh with a bunch of other strangers. Like, a comedy's good to see in a crowd because I think that laughter is infectious.
I think we've been really lacking some strong comedy this summer.
Yeah, no, I think that this fits the bill. I mean, okay. What else was there?
There was Central Intelligence, which I wasn't a massive fan of.
Yeah.
There was, God, what else has there been?
Yeah, I mean,
hasn't been. I mean, we've obviously got Bad Bombs in a couple of weeks.
Anyways,
Ghostbusters.
Those are the two movies that come out this weekend, along with Captain Fantastic, which I really want to see with Viggo Mortensen. Cell, which has been on VOD for a while,
it has.
And Fathers and Daughters.
Yeah.
So, you know, a little bit of something for everybody. And then quickly before we start taking calls, I saw the BFG this week.
Okay, what did you think?
It was terrible.
Really?
I could not believe it was even fucking directed by Steven Spielberg. I sat in this movie and just turned to my friend and was like, what are we watching right now?
So what's the problem with it then? Because out of can, it had really strong reviews. And I've seen from a lot of people that I was quite surprised liked it. And a lot of writers who I thought were automatically going to like it, kind of because it's a Spielberg movie.
It was just like, I don't know, whimsical nonsense. The girl I thought was kind of like mugging. First of all, I mean, she's a stand-in for Spielberg.
Right.
I mean, it looks just like a young Spielberg, this little girl. And it's like young Steven Spielberg chasing his dreams, like
She-Berg.
Literally, in the movie. I mean, Mark Rylance does good work as the giant, but the plot of this movie's all over the place. As soon as they involve like Queen Elizabeth, I was just like, I'm out. I'm done. So not surprised that is dying a quick death at the box office. Not one of Steven's better works.
No, I'm
a big fan of his.
Certainly, I know from friends in the UK, it's being ramped up, but it's not being released in the UK yet. That's coming out in a couple of weeks. It's getting more push there, but I was absolutely stunned by the lack of push that it got here. We touched on this briefly last week when films like Alice Through the Looking Glass were getting considerable pushes from Disney. But Disney have got Pete's Dragon coming out in a few weeks.
It's just weird, you know. It feels like Disney almost set him up to fail. Because it's coming 2 weeks after Dory? Why release the BFG 2 weeks after Dory?
Here's a thought. Have Disney got too many films out this year? Because it seems like the majority of releases. And should there be, and I touched on this previously as well, a bit of a rein put on how many films a studio can release widely theatrically during a year?
No.
So there's no monopolizing.
That's insane. No.
Is it insane, though?
Yes.
Okay. No, I...
Yes!
Right, well, that was a good discussion.
Someone should be able to limit the amount of movies Disney puts out?
I'm just wondering, because you've got to look at
market... Or any studio?
Disney have got so many movies coming out this year.
First of all...
Many of which are high quality.
Do you know, there were three times as many movies 20 years ago. It was like, studios were putting out way more movies. This is nothing.
Okay, maybe somebody on the calls will want to look at that.
Anyways, we are starting to take calls.
Cool.
424-253-0504. Ask us anything, gang. We're open to it.
Okay, here's what some people are saying in the chat room. Spielberg, this is from a multi-plat gamer guy. Spielberg's overrated, in my opinion, when it comes to family movies, at least. He had great movies in the 80s, but he hasn't made a good film in the genre for a long time.
Okay, but you know, the failure of the BFG prompted a ton of articles of like, what went wrong with BFG? Has Steven Spielberg lost his touch?
No.
I do not think that he has lost his touch. No. I think that he is involved in producing so many things that you guys love. You know, he is helping all these guys who you think aren't out of touch realize their visions. All right, we are going to take a call.
We have our first caller. Caller, where are you calling from and what's your name?
Hi, this is Robert Butler.
What's up, Robert?
Hey, I had a question about the new Spielberg Ready Player One just started filming last week.
Okay.
Yep.
So what are you guys' thoughts on the production? I just finished reading the book, and it was really, really interesting. So,
Well, I just finished reading the book, too, week. I fucking love the book. Again, this was a book that I've had on my shelf for 2 years, 3 years maybe, and I was just too intimidated to read it. I felt like I wasn't going to get the references. A lot of the stuff was going to go over my head. I just don't read those kinds of books. It's not what I'm into. And I finally gave it a chance, and it really was wonderful. I think that the cast, and you know, I read it with the people in mind, you know, like with Ben Mendelsohn and Ty Sheridan and Olivia Cooke, all these people. I think it's going to be a really special movie. It's all about how Steven utilizes this magic leap technology, which is going to sort of simulate the Oasis, the virtual reality world at the center of the film. What about you, Robert?
Oh, no, I think it has the potential to be really great. Again, I didn't think, you know, I'm a bit younger than, you know, than the book has a lot of references to, but it clues you into a lot of the 80s references and stuff. But I was a little, it was a little concerning how there's a section of the book, there's sections of the book that reenact classic movies. I wonder if the rights for those movies are going to come into play in the production of this.
That's a good question. I'm sure that, you know, Steven Spielberg can call in a few favors if anyone in this town can. You know, I don't know if it'll end up being War Games or something else. I think who owns War Games? Maybe that's MGM.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I know Steven has said he's not going to, you know, discuss or use his own movies. It's funny, I'm not that familiar with a lot of the references either, but this week I had a chance to play a modded Xbox that has all like the Nintendo and Super Nintendo games, and I played Joust, which is a big part of Ready Player One. Terrible game. What the fuck am I playing?
Most of the games in the 80s were shit, to be honest with you.
Anyways, very, very excited for Ready Player One, and thanks for giving me a chance to talk about it. Have a good weekend, Robert.
Dino has said Ready Player One equals Charlie and the 80s Nostalgia Factory, which I think is fair.
Hello, and welcome to Meet the Movie Press. Hello?
Hi, hello? Who's this?
Hi.
Hey, it's Mike. How are you?
Good,
hey,
how are you, Mike?
Good, good. I just was curious, because I was thinking about this the other day, with the sort of success of, you know, Hamilton, in terms of, like, on Broadway, but also, like, culturally, there's a lot of talk about it. I'm curious, is there any talk in Hollywood about really just doing any movies involving, you know, colonial times, Revolutionary War era pictures in general? Because there's very few of them even out there.
I think yes. I think the answer to that is yes. I think that the George Washington movie will be in theaters before 2020.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2016. Yeah, I see the George Washington, a George Washington movie being made in the next 2 to 3 years. I don't know who that will be, if it'll be Bradley Cooper.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, I can actually see it, yeah, with the wig.
Okay.
He has a kind of, like, regal, old-timey... anyways.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just curious to see who's going to direct it. If it's going to end up being, like, that 300-style Zack Snyder approach, or Darren Aronofsky wanted to do one for a while.
You can just... If that happened, though, you could just imagine the articles coming out. That was not historically accurate.
Really? But yeah, as for Hamilton, like a movie, I know Lin-Manuel has said, absolutely not, not for a while anyways. So,
but they are filming the musical to put it in theaters.
That's why, you know, I don't know why people are spending thousands and thousands of dollars for a shit seat to some of these last performances.
Bragging rights.
Yeah.
Like, it's a pissing contest.
I saw Hamilton with the original cast, but it's like, we're all going to get to see it because it's being filmed.
Yeah. And in 5 years,
I know that takes away part of it,
will
but
care.
Anyways. Yeah, that's what I have to say about Revolutionary War stuff. Thanks for calling.
Yep.
So yeah,
we'll take the next call.
Hello, who's this, and where are you calling from?
That's why, you know, I don't know why people are...
Hello.
Oh, hello, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Oh, great. This is Jeremy calling from Chicago. I've been listening to you guys back from the start and catching up, and just got to say you guys are, you know, like one of my greatest sources of movie news, and I love both of your inputs, and it's okay to have different inputs. But,
thank you.
Fight each other about it.
Well, make sure you tell everybody you know about us, because that would be great.
Lead the Chicago charge.
Yes.
Anything you wanted to talk about today?
I don't want to make this. I don't want to make this like a damper on the subject. But going back to, I guess, like how, you know, personal lives kind of affect like film work and everything. Not to touch on it too much, but going back to the allegations between Johnny Depp and Amber Heard, all that kind of stimulated around when Through the Looking Glass came out.
Yeah.
Now, he has Pirates of the Caribbean coming out next year, which is obviously the bigger character that Disney probably cares about him for. Obviously,
sure.
Last year he was inducted into like the Disney Icon Hall of Fame as Jack Sparrow.
Mm-hmm.
He comes out as Jack Sparrow.
Yep.
He goes to children's hospitals as Jack Sparrow, which, you know, until we actually hear the actual truth between that allegation, you know, that kind of makes me hard to think, like, that's, you know, that's Johnny Depp, when all of his other, like, his ex-wives are saying, like, no, he's never like that.
Sure.
But if all of this was to happen when Pirates would have come out, like, if all this happened when Pirates was closer to coming out, do you think Disney probably would have done more of a, like, cautionary reaction cleanup than they probably, I don't really remember them doing that when Looking Glass came out. Like, I'm sure he didn't do a lot of interviews, but, like,
well,
I think with Pirates, they would have been like, hey, we gotta end up with more.
Do you know what? No, I don't. I see what you're saying, but I don't think so, because what happens in his private life and what happens to do with a film are two completely separate entities. So standard would be that unless it was really directly related in some way to the film or the film production, it would be highly unlikely that a studio, and this is, you know, for any actor and any studio, would get involved unless it was something, you know, that was directly related or you know, that level or higher. You know, they wouldn't get involved in actors' personal and talent.
Do you
personal
think that
life.
They would hide him? I don't think that they could hide him.
No, I don't think you can. But also,
for Alice, you could.
Yeah, but also Johnny Depp doesn't. He pick and chooses the press that he would want to do. He doesn't just see. He's not like some actors when they do junkets. Like I'm doing one today, and I'm interviewing the whole cast. You know, you don't. There are people in Hollywood that you only have. They do select outlets.
Yeah.
You know, they do things like Empire magazine. They do things like Ellen, et cetera, et cetera. And when that kind of thing happens, if you put them in front of someone, or you know, maybe CNN or whatever, it's usually part of an orchestrated publicity process where the issues will be tackled. They'll be discussed. It'll be a very controlled manner. It'll be honest. It's not like, you know, a studio would cover it up, but it would have to be addressed, and that would be it. And that's the way that you would move on. I don't think you could directly correlate what happened or what was alleged with the box office of Alice. That
no,
was just
it,
a case
had,
of yeah, I don't think it had anything
nothing,
to do with it. People just didn't want
to
see that movie. And I think moving
right,
forward
was,
with Pirates,
yeah.
I think people are still going to see Pirates irrespective of what happens in Johnny Depp's private life.
It'll be very interesting to see if any journalist has the balls to bring it up, because I'm sure that any condition of sitting down with him in advance of that movie, you'll be asked to not discuss it.
Yeah.
Especially if you know, everything's still pending.
And we've been in those junket situations before where you're asked not to do it. And usually if you just ignore them, they will just end the interview, take your tape away, and you will just not get the interview.
Right.
And probably be blacklisted.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of like when that interviewer last year interviewed Robert Downey Jr. for Age of Ultron, and you know that whole thing where
Christian Guru Murphy, Channel 4 in the UK, yeah.
Like he should have did that, yeah.
Well, yeah, but also I think let's use that as an example. And I'm not here to bring down someone else who's a journalist, and you know I know of Christian, and obviously I'm from the UK. I don't think necessarily the problem with that in particular thing, that was something to do with questions that weren't structured very well. That interview went from, tell me about Age of Ultron. By the way, you used to do drugs, blah, blah, blah. Have you thought about this that you've talked about many times before and is about 25 years old news? It was from, you know, going from 0 to 50 straight away, completely unrelated topics, and it was just not related to anything that was currently happening. And it was stuff that that Robert Downey Jr. had discussed on many occasions before, and that's not why they agreed to do the interview. So that's why that interview went tits up. It wasn't necessarily because of Robert Downey Jr.'s private life. He's talked about his situation with substances many times in the past. So I think that's kind of a separate case. That was just someone doing a shit job interviewing, in my opinion.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in. Have a good weekend.
Thanks a lot, guys. You too. And I'm going to be listening every weekend. You guys are such a big inspiration to me. I hope that I can meet you guys someday.
We really appreciate it. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. Next caller. Do we lose it?
Just hung up. They'll be back in a second.
Cool. Okay, no problem.
Sean Atkins in the chat is saying that Warner Brothers have announced the Tomb Raider movie release date, which falls on the same day as the Flash movie. What are our thoughts on that?
Well, obviously, they're not releasing both movies on the same day, so we'll assume that the Flash movie is being moved.
I would think, yeah.
There you go. Breaking news.
Cool.
I mean,
they ask. We, I love this. Like,
wait, they're really going to release both movies on the same day? No, that's not how things work. Woody Allen has casting his next movie.
Mm-hmm.
It includes Justin Timberlake and Juno Temple, both the JTs in my life.
Yep.
Along with James Belushi and Kate Winslet.
Mm.
An intriguing quartet.
But he likes to do this. He likes to pick some people
that
are quite mainstream.
He's been getting crazy
and
recently.
Some really eclectic.
He's working with Miley Cyrus on the TV show, right? Yeah.
I'm just glad to see James Belushi being cast in movies again.
Always liked Jim Belushi. I actually like this ensemble. I was thinking about Timberlake the other day and just when I was at Variety, not so much at The Wrap, but at Variety, I felt like I was tracking him for everything.
Mm.
He was a guy whose name was just in the mix for everything. And now you don't hear about him that much, maybe because he's been busy working on music.
Yeah.
I
think that's it.
I'm ready for him to get back out there. And who better than Woody Allen to get him back out there?
He's an actor who is perhaps in quite a few movies that aren't great, but he's great
maybe
in them.
Maybe learned his lesson. I mean, I always liked him. I think he's a very engaging presence.
Mm.
But that Miles Teller, Josh Brolin fire movie.
Yeah.
If this was 5 years
ago. I love both those guys.
Yeah, me too. If this was 5 years ago, Justin Timberlake gets cast in that movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And now he's not one of the guys who...
He's one of those guys, as you say, he does have his music and he's been off having a family and stuff like that. It's not like he's taken 5 years away from Hollywood and gone and done nothing and it's a comeback. You know, the fact, I think, it keeps him fresh in our eyes that he does do a spate of movies, goes away, comes back, but he doesn't really disappear. I think that's a good career choice. He's a wise, wise man.
I got some breaking... not some breaking news, but okay, here's a little thing.
Yeah.
Just because, I was thinking about Timberlake, I'm thinking about how good he was in The Social Network, I'm thinking about David Fincher. This is what goes through my mind. Whenever you're speaking, Simon.
Okay. What, you mean you're not listening to me?
I'm totally listening. I'm 100% with you. What?
Wow. I feel a bit hurt by that.
I was just teasing
you. Okay, fine.
That's a bad segue.
I think that went very well.
Justin Timberlake, David Fincher, etc. I hear that HBO is reviving both the Fincher projects that it had put on ice without David Fincher, though.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
So I hear that HBO is bringing back Utopia, and that they are going to work on that, video synchronicity. There's 18 titles to that show. Living on Video, Video Sync Crazy, I don't know. Either way, I hear that they want to redevelop both of those.
Okay.
Pretty intriguing.
Well, talking of redeveloping things and TV.
Oh, segue!
Boom! Back in the room.
You weren't even listening to what I was saying. You had that all queued up.
I listened to you. The Warriors. One of my favorite films
of
all time.
There we go. Good transition. Wait, we have a call.
Oh!
We'll take the call and then we'll
talk
about
the Warriors. Yeah.
Caller. Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. This is Sean from Kingston, Ontario.
Yeah, Sean. What's up?
Nothing much. Now, over the last couple of months, there's been a lot of talk of reshoots and how this could be a lot of trouble for productions. And the thing that's been really bothering me is I think a lot of these sites are using the term reshoots as a blanket term and not actually referring to what's actually going on. Because, I mean, World War Z undertook reshoots.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They had to actually reshoot the entire third part of the movie. But when you hear about the reports coming out from, say, Rogue One or from Suicide Squad or any other production, you hear about them actually adding additional footage and adding new scenes potentially, or adding segments to already included material. Now, that to me is different because that means that they're actually adding more material to an already possibly great product, and people are automatically assuming it's the worst. I just wanted to hear what you guys thought about what is going on with a lot of these different outlets that are just automatically assuming that it's bad news.
I think some of it is a lack of comprehension by some outlets of exactly what a reshoot entails. I think it's a lack of knowledge of the industry. I mean, most films will do additional shooting, whether it's pickups or redos, etc., etc. It's not uncommon at all. Scale obviously can differ from film to film. Sometimes people do, it gets as late as doing test screenings, and they realise that what they've already got as an ending is not really working, so they, you know, they want to pull something else out of the bag. And sometimes reshoots are done, you know, really late. A really good example recently was The Conjuring 2, where right up until 3 months before the film was complete, they actually then changed one of the characters and reshot a load of that. So, you
right,
know,
with the nun.
Yeah. Well, the nun wasn't in it. She was just a demon, you know, and then they were like, let's put in the...
They added that whole segment.
Yeah. So I just think it's... Some people look at it as a lack of comprehension, but... you know, of how film works, and they just see it as a negative thing, but it's not a negative thing. A lot of classic movies have had reshoots. A lot of classic movies. It's not uncommon at all.
I mean, again, this is the problem with the media today, in that the process gets over-reported, I think. You know, as every nook and cranny is sort of fair game for reporting these days.
Yeah.
To me, it's like, as an audience member, it's one thing for reporters and critics to sort of worry about this stuff. As an audience member, enjoy the movie that they release. Like, you know, don't worry about reshoot. I don't think it's indicative of anything. You know, just judge the film by whatever they put on screen.
Rogue Knight in the chat has just said the reshoots are different to pickups. Yes, they are. I know that. A lot of people don't know that. Some people misinterpret pickups and additional shooting for reshoots.
Yeah, when did reshoots become a dirty word? You know, it is just another part of the process. So,
right.
You know, it's
okay,
again,
well,
it's the media
thank
just...
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
No problem at all.
All right, guys, take care.
Hey, bye. Angie, thanks for calling. So,
we have one,
we have
more,
one last call.
Yeah, we'll take one more. Last call. Hello, welcome to Meet the Movie Press.
Kroll.
Oh, shit! Justin Kroll, guys, it's been a slow news week because Justin Kroll's been on vacation. Welcome back, buddy. How you been?
What's up, dude? I was going to do something like, you know, some character from Crash to try to trick you, but I just don't have
the time. I don't know all the characters in Crash, dude.
I dropped my car at the oil change. What's been the topic today? Did you break any interesting news? Like, that's not really true, but maybe it's true or something like that?
Oh, God. That must be a shot at Akira. I don't know. I hear that the Fincher series may be coming back to HBO without David.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I heard maybe without him, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Which, then, I don't care about.
Well, I guess so. I mean,
it also then stops being a Fincher project.
Off and, like, Terry Winner is like, before Vinyl got taken off and they replaced Terry Winner, I'm like, okay, now this show doesn't matter.
I never saw Utopia. I've been waiting for, like, sort of the American version. So I am excited that it's coming back, even without David. We'll see who they get to run it. Have you watched The Night Of yet, Justin?
Oh, it's amazing.
Great.
I actually watched Vice Principal last night.
Oh, you motherfucker.
But Night Of, get excited. Everybody should get.
I only saw the first one, and it was terrific. Did you watch it, Simon?
No.
Guys, the Night... no, I'm just saying... was originally called Criminal Justice. It's a remake of a British series, I believe. Mm-hmm. James Gandolfini was going to star in it.
Yeah.
He filmed the pilot, and then he died. So they, you know, took a few years. They found, you know, they recast John Turturro. And yeah, I thought it was terrific.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything you want to chat about, really?
You tell me. You called in, big guy. What's on your mind?
Today, but I was hoping to break something during your show, but someone's taking a fucking time returning my email.
Some publicist is going to be listening to this show being like, oh, God. I don't know. Have you seen anything good, or have you just been, like, living in Michigan?
I've been kind of catching up. I mean, I was in Detroit and for my sister's wedding and did Chicago and a little vacay. I'm trying to think. I mean, you guys talked about the Woody thing. I think that cast is getting pretty good.
Yep.
What do you think about Jim Belushi in that?
Controversy.
That's what you want to know, Simon?
Yeah. Well, some people in the chat have been saying, no, yeah, no, not Jim Belushi. He's done, like, one good movie. And I'm pleased to see him in it.
Yeah.
Well.
I mean, I guess the thing I was... Did you guys talk about Moonfall at all on your last show, the Roland thing?
Moonfall, no.
So, Roland, I was on this thing, and it broke while I was gone. And Moonfall, it was just, you know, this crazy idea. I'm amazed someone bought it, just because...
It's Roland Emmerich's next movie. It's about the moon falling towards Earth, right?
No, it's like the moon's like a spaceship, actually, with aliens in it, and like then they find out and they like come after Earth. It's Independence Day. It's
more
like
fucking aliens.
We all just saw what happened with Independence
Day. Did you see Independence Day? Never mind. No comment. No comment. okay, wait. Here's one. Here's one, Justin. We haven't talked about it yet. There's two stories. Let's talk about the Russo brothers doing the Warriors.
Yeah,
Hulu.
We were just about to get to that.
Yeah. Justin's a good person to discuss that with.
Yeah, well, obviously it's been, you know, it was going to be a number of sort of failed attempts to bring it back. As a reboot, as a movie. That didn't happen. So now Russo brothers, for those of you that don't know, are developing the Warriors as a 1-hour TV series. So
it's going to star Kevin Durant, Steph Curry.
And, you know, so obviously they're going to have to expand around the universe and the characters, et cetera, because the movie takes place over one night. But if they're going to have an ongoing series of 1-hour shows, they're going to have to come up with more than one night.
A longer journey. Justin, what do you think about this being remade for Hulu?
What, is it Hulu or Spike TV?
It's Hulu. It's Hulu. Paramount and Hulu.
Yeah.
Okay. I like it. I mean, there is just certain properties that I just feel like it's just, I mean, it's a better route sometimes to take. I feel like, what can you do differently with the Warriors? The Warriors kind of was like in the zeitgeist and it fit the time. Now it just feel like it would be dated. It'd be like Point Break a little bit, like, you know, a brand more than an idea. So the TV show, I think, if done right, could be something pretty cool. And in the right hands. It's, you know, I think there's, you know, the reason I said Spike is I think they're doing a missed TV series, which I think would be a great idea.
I
think there's certain proper. I know people are making fun of like Lethal Weapon and whatnot, but there are times where maybe not like as high profile, but more like culty stuff works in that TV world. So yeah, I'm game for it if the right showrunner comes involved and they get a good cast. I'll check it out.
I mean, I think that the Russo brothers doing this could be pretty cool. They seem like they have the right sensibility. And I like that this is going to Hulu. I enjoyed 11/22/63.
Well, what's good about the Russos is they first came, everybody forgets they came from TV first.
Right.
They were Community guys. So they understand the format maybe even better than the TV world. I mean, I guess if you think about it, Marvel is kind of like TV, like you know, the way it's run, it's almost like a network in a way at their studio with the red rooms and whatnot.
And
so, I think that works.
And we've seen from obviously their work with Marvel that they're very, very, they're very good at handling universes that get quite complex quite quickly and carrying stories through and stuff like that, and really developing characters nicely, even if they're quite small in it. So I'm personally, as a big fan of the Warriors film, I'm really excited about this. It pleased me.
Yeah,
I'm just glad it's not.
And then, what was the other one, Jeff?
I'm just glad it's not on Fox. you know, the other one. I don't know if you're tracking this or if this is more up McNary's alley. But what's with this Deadline story about this 9-year-old girl, a reporter who now has a book and potentially a movie deal for helping to solve a murder? Are you tracking that?
I remember reading about it before. It was a story.
Yeah.
If you're a screenwriter in this town, are you like frustrated that like you're working your whole life and now this 9-year-old girl like stumbles upon a clue at a local murder and she's the new Nancy Drew?
It's just like I don't even know what to say. It's just, I guess we are in the wrong business. Like, what do you? I guess here's the opening for you, Jeff. Like, this should be your motivation right now. Like, oh, if a 9-year-old, I got the time now. Let me go write my script.
maybe I'll bring the crayons.
I don't know what it is.
I'm working on it, buddy. I'll need you to write an article soon.
Yeah, Night of, everybody, check it out. And Vice Principals, I think everybody's gonna be happy with too.
I can't wait to see it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, take care, Kroll.
And talking of Vice Principals, Danny McBride. This week.
Hey, that's right. Good segue.
Boom.
Look at that.
It's like I do this for a living. So he was talking to, I think it was Rolling Stone this week, about the new movie that he's doing, Alien Covenant.
That's Alien Covenant. He's the fucking captain of the ship.
He is. And one thing he said in it as well is that there's going to be a lot of sort of a lot of the aliens are not necessarily going to be the CGI aliens. There are people on set in alien suits,
right,
which I think is brilliant. We've seen from a lot of films recently that, you know, sometimes you can over CGI and it does spoil the magic a little bit. That is something endemic in Independence
Day.
What
movies could you be discussing?
Yeah, but I, you know, I just think it's going to be good. I like it. I'd like to see Hollywood going back to doing more of the sort of the matte painting on things. I was watching a lot of movies sort of from 30, 40 years ago recently, and I'm just like, you know, some of the CGI now has got so good that it's so unreal. It's just totally not realistic.
How many movies, you know,
Jungle Book, you see, was a really good example because some of that was CGI and some of that was matte.
But it was beautiful, the way it was done. It was clean. It was just not like.
But it felt real in a way that a lot of the CGI movies just feel so CGI. It's not suspending belief.
There was a lot of CGI in Ghostbusters, gang. I mean, I don't know.
I haven't seen it yet.
I mean, it's like Apocalypse, Independence Day. It's just this. All these big blockbusters have become this CGI nonsense. Well,
here's the thing. I was doing an interview with the director of Finding Dory recently, Andy Stanton, and he was saying that now, because I asked him about how technology has moved on from making that movie, and I said, you know, does it make it easy? And he said, well, pretty much you've taken things as far as they can go when it comes to things like that, and it's now about being how you've got all the colours have been discovered, you know, all the brushes are there. It's really about how good you are as a painter to paint the picture.
Right.
And if your picture comes out shitty, it's because you're kind of a shitty artist. And I think we're at a point in Hollywood, I think there's still ways we can take it, but I think we're at a point in Hollywood where it is down to how good of an artist you are. And if it comes out shitty, it's just that you're not that good of an artist. You're not using the tools right. It's like, you know, trying to whisk an egg with a fucking, you know, piece of toilet paper.
We only have a few more minutes left in the
show. Yeah, we do, yeah.
Again, I don't know, I don't know how much I can say about Ghostbusters or whatever. The one thing I wanted to impress upon people was just how good Kate McKinnon is in this. She's just playing this glorious weirdo.
Yeah.
And I thought I had a blast with her. I mean, you know, the movie as a whole is okay. I don't think that it lives up to the original. I think that it has no fault of the actresses. The women all do a great job. I think that they're let down by a guy, in this case, Paul Feig, whose script, you know, is just all right.
Okay.
But it certainly had its moments, and it's certainly not a bad movie like a Batman vs Superman or an X-Men Apocalypse. I'm looking forward to seeing, because I'm just an unemployed dude. I'm not a critic. I'm looking forward to seeing all the, you know, official critical responses when those hit.
And that embargo lifts on Sunday, right?
I don't even know. No one told me anything about an embargo. I think that either Sunday or Monday. I don't even know.
Okay. I'm hoping to catch it next week. I mean, it's out next Friday, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so I'll probably, if I don't get to a screening next week, I'll have to pay and see it, which is...
I just encourage people to check it out for themselves and not go by, you know, either the bad buzz or the bullshit commenters, which, and Paul takes some good shots at just the commenting community a lot in this movie. It's almost in like a Kevin Smith way.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, check out Ghostbusters when that hits. I'm here for next week's show.
I think you are. Yeah.
Okay.
Let's touch on a couple of other things. Yeah. Kiefer Sutherland joining the Flatliners remake.
I feel like this has been in the making for months.
Yeah.
I heard about this when I was still employed.
Well, Ellen Page, Diego Luna on the cast, Nina Dobrev, James Norton. I think they've just been waiting for one of the original cast to come on board, but he's now joining.
Yeah, so well, he's like the head of the department or whatever. Yeah. Like, those are his students.
How big his role is going to be, don't know, but I'm just glad. I like Flatliners.
10-20 minutes tops.
Here's a Flatliners story for you. The day that my father died, my friends were like, hey, let's take you to the movies to cheer you up. And I was like, okay. They took me to see Flatliners. Thanks, friends.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was great. So talking of other sequels, No Goonies 2, Corey Feldman said this week that that's not going to happen.
How is this even a thing?
What year did the Goonies come out?
1986? We've been talking about this for 30 years.
Yes. He says it's basically because Richard Donner is now too old. I think that just that time has passed. We'll just leave that. Saw Legacy is going to start filming in September.
What?
Yeah, Saw Legacy. You know, Final Chapter was in 2010. They're redoing the franchise now. Exactly what it's going to be about, we don't know. We're looking at possibly Jigsaw's beginnings, so it could be like prequels. which will be interesting. I mean, the franchise made unadjusted about $415 million. So, you know, it's a franchise with some money, but we'll see what happens with that. But that's shooting in September. And we talked about Marvel earlier, Spider-Man Homecoming new casting news. I think it's Anne Gorey Rice.
Yeah, no, the little girl from The Nice Guys.
Yeah, and These Final Hours, which if you haven't seen These Final Hours, it's on Netflix.
What the fuck is that?
It's an apocalyptic thriller from Australia. It came out in like 2013.
With who?
It's got no name cast, but it's really, really good. Okay. Seriously, you should check it out.
All right, you got excited there, so it must be. But yeah, I like that addition to the Spider-Man universe. I don't know who she's going to be playing.
No. Well, we don't know who, apart from Spider-Man, we don't
know who anybody's playing,
we don't know who
right.
anybody's playing right now. So, yeah, which I quite like.
Hasn't even been confirmed.
No.
Steven Soderbergh's doing a movie on the Panama Papers.
Mm.
Sounds cool to me.
I like him as a director. I don't think all his projects have nailed it, but I'm always interested to see what he's putting out.
I think that's a pretty juicy topic for him. Mm. I like that Kate Mara has been cast as the girl in Chappaquiddick with Jason Clarke.
Yep.
That's interesting to me. Idris Elba's making his directorial debut with a project called Yardy.
Yeah.
What does Yardy mean?
Yardy is a kind of Jamaican gangster, I believe. The Yardies were big in the UK for quite a while. It's about a guy who basically brings over drugs to London, and it's his life, his rise and fall as a drug dealer.
Right. Like, he goes from, what, Jamaica to London?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Okay.
I think it's Jamaica, yeah.
THR had an interesting story this week about two ice cream truck drivers, and you know, or like rivals, and that's going to be a movie. I could actually see that with the right casting. And then finally, you know, Michael Cimino died this week.
Yeah. That was genuinely a real shame.
I have the Criterion Heaven's Gate in my apartment. I haven't watched it yet. It was a gift from a friend. His death has made me want to finally put it in and give it a shot. I love The Deer Hunter. The Deer Hunter was my background on Twitter for a long time, one of the posters. I think it's a terrific war movie. Great performances. I don't know. Any thoughts on Michael's passing?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's a director that did a few movies, but not a huge amount of movies.
Well, he got burned by Heaven's Gate.
Exactly, which I think was not a terrible film. I think visually, I think it's a really interesting film, and I've watched it many times. And you know, it's like Blade Runner for me. It's not a film that I initially loved when I saw
Heaven's
it the first
Gate
time.
Is like Blade Runner for you.
Stay with me on this. It's a film that I watched because I thought I should watch because it was obviously, you know, such a big part of movie history. I've learnt to love Blade Runner. I've learnt to appreciate Heaven's Gate.
Okay.
And I think it's a film that everybody should see.
It sounds like a movie that got unfairly shit on upon
its release. Yeah, I think
it
did. There's a lot about it that I think, you know, are positives.
Yeah, there's some revisionist history coming into play where people are sort of reconsidering it. So I need to consider it in the first place.
Even as a piece of filmmaking, as a piece of art, it's worth watching.
Anything else going on this week? Anything you want to plug?
Well, I'm going to be talking to the Star Trek cast director next week. Very excited about that.
Ask Justin Lin about Akira, since Justin seemed to splash cold water on
that
report.
Do I am just literally I'm leaving here. I'm going to talk to Mila Kunis about Bad Moms,
you
which
lucky
I saw last
bastard.
Night. I know you want to come and hold my bag.
I would. Yeah. Where can the good people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Showbiz Simon and Instagram at Showbiz Simon and on Facebook. This is Simon Thompson, and you can see my work, God, all over the place: Forbes, IGN, Mashable, loads of places.
Wow, okay. You can't see my work anywhere right now, but you may see it soon. I'm Jeff Snyder. You can follow me on Twitter at The Insnyder. You can see all the movies that I see on my blog, theinsnyder.blogspot.com. And, Popcorn Talk Network. Make sure you rate, comment, subscribe, follow.
Tell your friends.
All that good stuff. I'll see you tomorrow at the pool party, Maria Menounos' house.
Yeah, I'll be the guy in the mankini.
Fantastic. Have a good weekend, everybody.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.